important that he can become liberated, but he can't do it through any kind of karmic or gyan activities of karma or gyan. Right? It's only through devotional service. Right? So then then this devotional service, then that is happening because of the association of devotees. Right? Like that. It means that he's done service in the past, so he's continuing with that by great fortune and becomes reawakened, or by the association of devotees, it's begun. But in either case, it both comes from devotees. Right? The one is he's there, and then he comes in contact, they take it up. The other is by contact, then they become convinced, and they start to take it up and practice. Right? So, like that. The second instance of happening is that he gets an association with the saintly persons by virtue of the results of such pious activities. Right? In other words, before it was his pious activities, devotional services. Right? And the second is that he's performed agyata sukrita, by that he comes in contact with devotees. Either case, it's coming from devotees. Because the devotees are causing the agyata sukriti. But in one, it's that they're generating it for you. The other is that it's grown to such an extent, now it develops an interest actually in the process. Does that make sense? So you could say, so one is they're coming from this, the other is that they've already, how do you say? They've already performed the devotional activities. Right? So that would be in association of devotees like that. So always that's a central feature. But one is that you've taken it up, the other is that it's been created for you. He has been able to awaken his own true disposition, fortunately, by dint of associating himself with other saintly persons, can only be considered as a saintly person or sadhu. In other words, someone who is awoken by the association of saintly persons, he is a saintly person. Right? If he awakens on his own and all this, not in the association, he'll never actually be a saintly person. You know, because he'll be speculative, he'll be pious, but he won't actually have that proper, how you say, situation and devotional service that's necessary. Are there a lot of mosquitoes? Oh, okay. And, no, I'm just saying because it's a little, sometimes it blows, if it blows up, it's okay. When it blows directly, it's a little, sometimes hard to, if you're just sitting and nodding your head, it's okay. You have to take a deep breath and speak, but sometimes it's harder. An ecstasy of devotion is developed through practicing the chanting of the holy name of Sri Hari and others under the powerful effect of association with the saintly persons. In other words, chanting Krishna's name, the holy name, in the association of devotees, then ecstasy of devotion is developed. By and by, an awakening of loving and ecstasy is developed. An air of liberation starts blowing in proportion to the awakening of loving ecstasy as a concomitant beneficial effect. Right? So that to the degree that affection for Krishna is awakening, to that degree then one is becoming freed from the material energy. One is being freed, liberated. Okay. So is that clear? So this is the soul means, in other words, the conditioned soul can become liberated, and this is the process, only through devotion, nothing else, in association with devotees, right, through the chanting. Yes?
Like he says, you know, only those who are awakened by the sadhus are considered to be sadhus as saintly persons. But rather, when we get this example of, let's say, Mirabai.
Yes, but she's considered a rough devotee. Rough meaning that it's not fully developed. Because what are her last songs about? So then why are you giving her as an example if you don't know? You're just pulling the Hindu trick of just find a hole and think, yeah, over here there's something. See, Mirabai then in the association of Tulsidas, she became an impersonalist like him. So she was always in her earlier songs talking about devotion to Krishna. At the end, she's talking about merging into Krishna. So that's the point, is that it seems that it's something, so there's something from previous life, there's some kind of, but not enough to put her in association of actually the bona fide devotees. Does that make sense? So it does. Therefore, no one's really surrendering from that. It's nice, it develops a nice sentiment, but there's not so much surrender. Or you see someone like, I think it's Tukaram, he's Maharashtra?
Yes.
Yeah. He actually met Lord Chaitanya when he came through. So his process of chanting and all that is connected with the Sankirtan movement properly. So therefore, he gets a lot more results, people actually seriously practicing Vaishnavism. You know, while those who are interested in Mirabai, it's bhajans they'll do, they'll sit now and again, it's a little bit of religion. But outside of that, there's not necessarily a serious practice.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Okay, aspect 7. Knowledge of relationship is awakened upon discoursing the aspects mentioned under 1 to 6 in association with saintly persons. Alright, so relationship itself, the knowledge of what is relationship by discussing these first 6 is awakened. Right? Right, aspect 1, that was the Shastra, no? Or no, that was before that. Aspect 1 was Krishna. Right? He's arranged that he gives an affirmation, that's the Shastra. So aspect 1, Krishna is the source of all knowledge. 2, he's omnipotent. 3, he is the ocean of all rasa. Then 4 will be about the position of the soul. Then 5 is the conditioned living entity, and 6 is the liberated living entity, right? Okay. So now that will establish all the different, the knowledge of relationship, right? Because now you know everything about the Lord, and you know about the jiva, right? Now the 7th one will be the connection between these two. Okay, like that. Knowledge of relationship is awakened upon discoursing the aspects mentioned under 1 to 6 in association with saintly persons. Classification of knowledge of relationship and will need some editing here. Classification of knowledge of relationship will be attempted under the 7th aspect. An acquisitive living entity usually wants to know, 1, who am I? 2, whom I belong to? 3, what is my relationship with the universe? Upon discoursing on these 3 points elaborately, one observes that oneself as a living entity is but a corpuscular consciousness, an eternal servant of Lord Krishna, and that this entire cosmos is the manifestation of the phenomena of oneness and difference of Sri Krishna. Sri Krishna is the only relation. Any sort of speculation on the basis of the so-called theory of evolution is redundant and non-Vedic under the inconceivable potency of Sri Krishna. All living entities and the entire cosmos are eternally different and non-different from Him. One's position in this material universe is thus not of eternal existence. It is just a prison house. From this understanding develops one's devotion in unflinching surrender under Lord Sri Krishna, which means a deep confidence is awakened. So this Achinta Beda Beda Tattva is establishing that everything is Krishna. And so our relationship is with Krishna. We used to have a saying when we go out camping that smoke follows beauty. So you got up and went there and then the smoke went there. So. So you don't have to feel bad being complimented. So this Achinta Beda Beda Tattva is in establishing that Krishna is one with the whole universe, and so our relationship is only with Him. Because anything that we would have a relationship with is Krishna. At the same time as He as a person is separate from all that. Right? So, in other words, all those things that we don't see Krishna in, it's still Krishna. And those that we do see Krishna in, then that's Krishna. So all there is Krishna. Like that. So that's the point. So this whole development of evolution like that is useless because it's leaving God out of it. It's an atheistic concept, how the soul develops and progresses, you know, from you know, a one-cell living entity to, you know, a human being. But God's not anywhere a part of it. So it's useless for the actual spiritual progress or any progress of the living entity. It doesn't actually benefit you in anything. You know, it doesn't. There's no aspect that it does something in. You know, all the other sciences do something. Chemistry does something. Quantum physics does something. But evolution doesn't really do anything for anybody. You know, it doesn't generate any money anywhere. Doesn't it? You heard of anything?
Sells books.
Huh?
Sells some books.
Sells books. Okay. keeps teachers busy. Keeps them off the streets, like that.
It does generate money.
Huh?
It generates money. Makes the models of all the prehistoric creatures.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you get propaganda. You have the whole.
Of Science City. Dinosaurs that roar like what do you call it? Like beasts or something? You know, generally lizards tick or hiss. Yes.
And how can it be fixed in their ignorance? Because then they can just have something material that they can relate to as being the end. In other words, we should actually have to excel ourselves to come up to a standard that is.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Prabhupada says, you know, okay, so maybe your forefathers are monkeys, but mine aren't. He always had common things like that. You know, it's like, you do that in your country, maybe in your country, not in mine. You know, it's like... You know.
So while we're on the point, what is our position on dinosaurs?
What is our position on dinosaurs? You need a position.
Did they exist or not?
It's like this. Depending upon how it's arranged, sometimes between the yugas, then Kali Yuga, then in Dwapara Yuga, everything's twice as big. In Treta Yuga, it'll be four times. In Satya Yuga, it'll be eight times, right? So that's one aspect. Another is that you have the element of... say sometimes it's 10 times. Each is 10 times bigger. But in any case, it's significantly bigger. That when Muchukunda came out of his cave and from Treta Yuga, in Dwapara Yuga, all the trees are like bushes. You know, so he knew it's like, you know, he's in the wrong age. You know. You know, so it's significant. So now, if you have like a kimono dragon, it's how big? It's like 8 feet, right? So then, if you take that and make it four times the size, or eight times the size, you know what I'm saying? So easily, even your little common little iguana becomes very big. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. And then in these other ages, sometimes you have a little bit more wild living entities. Because, you know, to be big, you have to be more pious. Not necessarily smart, pious. You know, like dodos, they were very pious. Nice, you know, nice words, you walk up to them, they don't bother you. Like that, but a little naive. You know, like that, or the Momos in New Zealand, they were even bigger than the dodos. Like that, but you know, anything that's really big, they're generally more peaceful, more... There's something more dignified about them. You know, so therefore in previous ages, then there's more piety, so even those who would be animals and that, there would be some greater. Does that make any sense? That's one. Two is that they can have a little piece of a cheekbone or a skull, and then they make the whole rest of the face. Not only that, they put onto it what kind of hair is there and this and that. Would they actually be able to tell? How do they tell? From a bone? How can they tell? Right? How would they know that Indians' hair is black and a little thinner? The Orientals is black, more straight, but thicker. How would they tell that from a skull? How would they tell that, you know, the Indians who grow full beards but the Orientals who go not full beards, how do they tell that from the skull? But they come up with these whole things, what they look like, and because they have to come from a monkey, they make them more hairy. But they don't have to be more hairy. Why do they have to be more hairy? You know what I'm saying? Have you ever seen a skeleton of an elephant? It doesn't have the full face, and like here ours, you got an idea of a nose and all that. But them, it's just, it's part of, it comes up to here, and the whole rest of it is all, yeah. You wouldn't think that an elephant looked like what was coming from the skeleton, right? Because they have the basic bone structures the same, so they might have a foot like a horse or a cow or anything like that, but no, it's just a straight trunk. How did they get that? You know what I'm saying? So they find something, find some woolly mammoth somewhere or something. But, okay, that's, you know, but they still, how do they put all these together? When I was a kid, there was, I think, three kinds of people, right? You had, I don't know, Lucy wasn't around then, but whatever it is, you had, you know, the monkeys. Then you had, I think, Neanderthal. Then there was Homo erectus. Then you had modern man. So that was it. Now I think there's 15 different ones. You know, they got these, you know, Australia, you know, whatever it is, like that, and you know, different things. And when I was looking at it, it was different than when my father studied. He came one day and looked over my shoulder and says, "Wow, I learned something completely different." You know what I'm saying? So they're making it up as they go. Does that make sense? So the idea is that. And where all these people, they wouldn't know all these things. Why are the people like what they are and all that? They won't have an idea. But it goes back. It goes, means like you have, like in India, you have all the different varieties of natures. And nothing is specifically prominent. Right? Brahminical culture will be prominent. But otherwise, all the varnas, all the ashramas, is all prominent. Right? But like you take European, They have to go out and conquer something. They can't just sit there peacefully and be happy. Right? Like that. Africa, the tribes there are very much warring. Like that. You know, and then in China also you get a similar thing. So one thing is in common, but at the same time is what they're expert at is very, very different. You know, the Europeans, it's administration. You know, Africa, it's more arts. China, it's more, you know, the economics. Like this. So how did that come? But they won't be able to explain that. So Prabhupada was explaining that when Parasaram was doing his tour, you know, then means the Kshatriyas that could fled, they went towards Europe. Right? Then you'd have all the, you know, all the foot soldiers and all that, all the, you know, the warriors like that, they fled to Africa. And then the, you know, the Vaishyas who are, you know, bigger, they're like kings, like Nanda Maharaj is a king amongst Vaishyas. So they would fled to China. Right? Does that make sense? So then you see very much those natures there. Right? So they're actually, they're all coming from India.
Coming from, or they're emerging and influencing?
They may be, if there's locals there, they're merging, influencing there, but in any case, that element is there, because otherwise it's that, you know, on its own, then Africa is so many nations, and they were quite, you know, the fighting spirit was quite strong, you know. While you find some other places in the world, the locals weren't like that, you know, they weren't necessarily like that. Does that make sense? So you see that kind of connection. Like that. These things they won't be able to get because they don't understand. So they'll come up with all these different kind of elements and all that. But it's does that make sense? You know? Yeah. So you won't, you don't, you, yeah. Okay? So basically these elements are there, and so what's there, you know, it's not speculation. They make it prominent because it keeps people busy like that, but they could be doing something else. Is that, So then you said Chinta Beda Beda Tattva is that Krishna, the living entity, is non-different. Everything is non-different. Same time as there's a difference, right? Because everything's coming from Krishna, so there's a non-difference. The same time is because of the nature of the living entity, then they're different, right? Because they're conscious. Their consciousness is there, so that way then they act as a separate living entity. Does that make sense? Like that. So, I say, not act as a separate, they are a separate living entity, and by that consciousness, then they are able to function that way. Right? Okay. Okay, aspect 8. So far, an enlightenment in the understanding of relationship is thus attained. An association with a saintly person through singular devotion is elevated to the level of reverence. Now, deliberating on the matter of how Lord Krishna can be made pleased, one is inclined to approach and ask a bona fide spiritual master as to the process of satisfying Lord Krishna. The spiritual master, ascertaining one to be really surcharged with the qualities of reverence, imparts real devotional instruction to satisfy Lord Krishna. The systems of such a qualified person with reverence are thus quoted. Anyavilashita shunyam jnana karmadyanavritam anakulyena krishnanushilana whatever it is bhakti uttama. Chanting the holy names of Lord Krishna and glorification of his beauty, qualities and pastimes as an embodiment of the constitutional position of the eternal, blissful and omniscient entity, if performed through favorable disposition, should be considered the best type of devotion or the purest form of devotion. The practice of devotional process should be made favorably disposed to worshiping the Lord in relation to all sorts of activities, relationship and mental state of a living entity. Accordingly, a favorable disposition towards worshiping the Lord may be considered to lead a life which avoids all sorts of activities, relationship and mental states averse to worshiping. Right, so what we're saying is that now by studying these other aspects, the first six, you come to an understanding. Right? Then from that point of understanding, you understand that you're part and parcel of Krishna. Right? So then when that reverence for Krishna has, and all your relationship is with him, so that reverence for Krishna and that interest in developing that relation being there, then coming in contact with a bona fide spiritual master or getting receiving instructions, then one may be trained in what is actually the way to please Krishna. So that'll be the devotional service. Because before he was talking more about transcendence, right? And now he's talking, it means the devotion was pointed out, but it's more about being contaminated in the material world or being liberated from that. Now it's a matter of how to develop that love for Krishna. So then in that is one who's enchanting the holy name, then is absorbed in the quality, the form, the qualities, the pastimes, in association with the bona fide devotees. That's perfection of devotional service, right? So, yeah. So then, of that, then to be favorable, there's naturally going to be things that are going to be good for devotional service, and things, practices that are given up that are not good for devotional service, right? Okay. Okay, now let's see the next one, then we'll also see another form that's coming in here. In order to achieve such a disposition, one is to practice a little enthusiastic endeavor. Worshipping is required to be performed with an effort to awaken the realization of his own constitutional position of a living entity. The objective will be to offer the worship in a purified manner. There should be no other desire excepting a desire to improve upon worshipping. Accordingly, any desire for sense gratification and liberation even is required to be renounced altogether. There should, of course, be enterprises for acquiring knowledge and earning money through activities for livelihood, but all such aspects of activities and knowledge that may be usually concealed, may usually conceal unalloyed devotional enterprises, should be very carefully prevented. One should be away from indiscriminatory knowledge of Brahman and from activities devoid of devotional symptoms. So did we catch what just happened in these last paragraphs? It's another form that we're very used to, and it comes from the same author. Right. Chanting the holy names, this is the attitude we should approach the board. Okay, we've attained, now deliberation is there. And if he has these qualities, anyabi lashita shunyam, right? Then he can take up the chanting, right? Then in that he practices things that are favorable and unfavorable, you know, gives up what's unfavorable. Then in doing that, then he will have to perform his worship and, how you say? And therefore it's, how you say? That everything is in connection properly with that worship. Then the next one is that whatever he gets to take care of himself shouldn't lead him away from devotional service. We don't see another formula here. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote a songbook on this. Yeah, Sharanagati, the six symptoms of surrender. Right? So, but in it, when it's applied, means once you've accepted the process, then you're going to then accept what's favorable and reject what's unfavorable. We give it an order that that's what's going on. Accept what's favorable, reject what's unfavorable, then Sri Krishna is your maintainer, protector, then identify as a servant of Krishna and be meek and humble. Right? Because that will be your neophyte, your madhyama, and your uttama. Right? But at the same time, as to start the process, it always starts with devotees. Right? So even though the process starts at Shraddha, it's only because of Sadhu Sangha that the Shraddha happens. By Sadhu Sangha, you get the Bhakti Sukritis that allow it to happen. Right? So it's through the devotees. So it's by developing the proper attitude that one is able to therefore accept what's favorable, reject what's unfavorable. Right, therefore then the attitude is there, the, you know, this mood of reverence in approaching the spiritual master. So you're identifying as a devotee, right, and then showing that this absorption in the holy name, that is the best type of devotion. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, the last two are presented first, then you come to this, right? And so then in your protection and your maintenance, they shouldn't be in any way distracted from Krishna. So protection is Krishna, so our worship of Krishna is nicely. And our maintenance then, well, it has to be done, but it shouldn't be done in such a way it goes against developing unalloyed devotion. Does that make sense? Yeah. You understand? There are nine processes of devotion. There are nine processes of devotional service expounded as hearing the name and glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shravana, chanting his glories, Kirtana, remembering the Lord, Smarana, serving the Lord's feet, Paricharya, worshipping the deity, Archana, offering obeisances unto the Lord, Vandana, acting as the Lord's servant, Dasya, making friends with the Lord, Shakya, and surrendering oneself fully to the Lord, Atmani Vedana. Again, it's prescribed that these processes can be subdivided into some 64 auxiliary processes on the basis of principal components of devotional enterprise. Amongst these, some are of regulative principles or characteristics, and some are of prohibitive characteristics or principles. Right. So in other words, these nine, then those can be subdivided into 64. And of those 64, some will be what you should do, some will be what you shouldn't do. You know, what you should avoid. Right? The regulative characteristics of the auxiliary devotional process mainly include five essentials, right? Because of the 64, there's five essentials. Thus, chanting of the holy name of Hari, residing at the holy place of Hari, observing and meditating on the transcendental form and beauty of Hari, offering services to persons engaged in the service of Hari, and cultivating the study of the scriptures relating to the devotional service of Hari, is extremely essential to abide by the following 10 prohibitive principles. Right? So now he's going to go through, means he's, does he go through the whole thing? No, not necessarily. Okay, but we have the Nectar Devotion, the 64 items, so it's, it describes the same thing, right? Because whatever he is, he's Rupa Duga, so he's going to be presenting these things, but in such a nice a way that we can, you know, we can appreciate. Okay? It is extremely essential to abide by the following 10 prohibitive principles. Thus, abandoning all offensive activities, carefully giving up all non-Vaishnava association, restraining from initiation of many disciples in order to enhance the vanity as a spiritual master, abandoning the study and analytic discourse of a number of books. He said, we're just doing it to study. All right, so it should be very specific. Like that, you have a specific purpose. It's not you're studying to study, you're studying to develop your understanding. Right? Does that make sense? And devotion to Krishna. Like that. Otherwise, it's like the jigyasu, and jigyasu, having learned something, could go away. Right? But the jnani wants to know about Krishna, so whatever he learns is in relationship to Krishna. Therefore, he doesn't go away. Right? Does that make sense? Relinquishing all sorts of distressful and happy emotions arising out of material loss and gain. Declining to be overcome by mourning and deep attachment. Refusing an addition to any censure of Lord Vishnu and Vaishnava persons. Rejecting any practice of vulgarity as an adverse position. And refraining from inflicting worries on any living entity. Offenses are classified in two categories. Thus, offenses in serving, in offering services, and offenses in chanting the holy name. The offenses in offering service to the deity are to be seriously considered. Every devotee should refrain from the offenses relating to the chanting of the holy name. Thus, 1. Censuring any saintly person engaged in chanting the holy name. 2. Considering Godhead to be different from his holy name, form, qualities, and pastimes, and assuming the existence of different Godheads like Shiva and other, apart from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right. That's an interesting sense of it. Okay, so God is different from his name, because in the material sphere, a name and something is different, but God and his name are non-different. You know, or considering... how do you say? That they... And that the potencies of the positions of the demigods is something separate from the Lord, right? Because they're just his officers that manage the universe. So all the potencies that they have are coming from the Supreme Lord himself. So they don't stand independently, and Krishna is, and his name are non-different. 3. Despising the holy name, scriptural injunction, and the spiritual master. Right, so therefore, this, you know, yeah. Despising the scriptures meant for glorifying the holy name. Considering the glories of the holy name to be just hymns. Considering the holy name to be speculative. Committing sinful acts by virtue of the holy name. Equating the holy name, which is tantamount to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as the highest mellow in consciousness, with other forms of materialistic virtue or auspicious performances. Right? He's saying it as a, activity of piety. Preaching the holy name to any unqualified, disrespectful person. And 10, chanting the holy name to a long... Chanting the holy name... Yeah, along with vanity of egotism and a sense of attachment. These are the 10 offenses relating to the holy name of the Lord. These offenses in holy names are very cruel and merciless, inasmuch as these are very difficult to throw off. These can only be eliminated through the process of constant association with the saintly persons. Every disciple must be endeavoring to remain unaffected by these offenses in chanting the holy name. Right from the initiation in the holy name. It means he should always be like that. From there he should be being very careful. Chanting the holy name of the Lord along with his form and beauty, his qualities and pastimes, is the highest level of all devotional processes. when these devotional services are practiced strictly in accordance with the scriptures, then it may be considered to be ritualistic devotion, vaidhi bhakti. Through constant practice of such devotional services, an awakening of devotional ecstasy is obtained. Okay. Okay, so when it's practiced strictly in accordance with the scriptures, then it's ritualistic devotion, vaidhi bhakti. Right? And through that, you may awaken devotional ecstasy. Right? In other words, through vaidhi bhakti, you can come to bhava. Some may not consider that possible, but all the acharyas say that. But the point is then when it comes to that position, then if it hasn't started at Raganuga before that, then at that point it will. Right? At least for the Gaudiyas. If you're not Gaudiya, then it continues like that. It's fine. But for the Gaudiyas, then from there it will become Raganuga. Because it's after Anartha Nivriti that Raganuga has its full manifestation. Before that, it's only partial anyway. Does that make sense? Like that. Because then you can take Anartha Nivriti, meaning that after you've gotten rid of the gross elements of the devotional obstacles, and one's situated nicely in devotional service, one's steady. So that point of nishta you can consider has crossed Anartha Nivriti. Raganuga could be possible at that point. But it's only a partial form of it. Its full manifestation is only after coming to the transcendental platform. Because then one does not have a material body, one's dealing in one's spiritual form. Right? So then at that point you can fully manifest all this, yes.
So I think it's the partial and full manifestation. What is the partial and full manifestation?
What's the difference between the partial and the full? Means partial would mean that you may have an idea of your position in the spiritual platform, but you cannot act on that. You can only appreciate it. Right? While full means that you have the spiritual form, that is your form, so therefore you can act and do all the activities of that particular rasa. Does that make sense? So if one is conditioned and one is saying one can practice all these transcendental activities according to the rasa, that's sahajya. Right? So Raganuga isn't sahajya. Raganuga that practices Raganuga means that Raganuga practice in the conditioned stage as if one was on the constitutional stage, that's sahajya. But understanding that there's a difference between the constitutional position and the conditional, and therefore taking that into consideration in one's practice, then that's proper, then that's properly performed. But in any case, through vaidhi sadhana, it can also be obtained. Right? Does that make sense? Because if one says, no, it has to be started now, then the point is vaidhi would definitely be followed as a neophyte before nishta. Right? So then, having followed like that, if then you can come to the rag platform, why can't you follow a little longer and then come to the rag platform? Does that make sense? Yeah? No? Very good. Yeah? There is another process of devotional service which is extraordinary and known as spontaneous devotional service, in which the devotee follows in the footsteps of one of the eternal associates of Krishna in Vrindavan, Raganuga Bhakti. The spontaneous devotion of the inhabitants of Brajadam is substantial and authentic. Some virtuous person may sometime be inclined to imitate such devotional service simply out of a strong temptation. His performances in the devotional service may be considered as spontaneous devotion. In this consideration, there's no need for any scriptural reasoning. The only qualification in it is the urge to offer devotional service. These types of devotional services may very well be classified under the appellate aspect of absolute truth, Abhideya Tattva. Right, so he's saying that the Vaidhi Sadhana and the Raganuga Sadhana. So basically the main difference is desire, that's all. Raganu is there because the desire for it is there. That's all. What's the difference between the man sitting next to a plate of prasad who doesn't eat it and the man who does? Hunger. Yeah, hunger. And so what will that generate? Desire, right? And so therefore, he will make the endeavor. The man who has no hunger, desire, he won't endeavor. Does that make sense?
But if we say the need.
Yes.
Is desire or the need?
If the desire, if it's there, then there'll be need. If you don't desire something, there's no need for it.
So it doesn't say...
Where are you from?
Slovenia.
No, I was just wondering, because I was just... Otherwise, there's certain kinds of English you could use, but those wouldn't work. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. Don't worry about it. Okay, go ahead.
The need is deeper.
Because what I'm just saying is because you're not able to tell the difference between. No, the need is need, desire is desire.
Yeah.
Desire is I'd like that, need is I have to have it.
Yeah.
Desire is, wow, that's a nice bicycle. No, need is I gotta have a bicycle. Or I gotta have that bicycle.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking, is the need necessary for Raganuga? Or
if there's only, but if there's desire, wow, that's a nice bicycle, that would be nice to have. Do I make any endeavor?
No.
So only if there's need, I make endeavor. So to that degree the need is there, to that degree your endeavor will be. That makes sense, yes.
Is that mean for some of the anxieties that feel some element, you know, loba, grieving, there's an aspect of writing with it?
Yeah, I mean, the point is it's not that it's this or that. It means that there's these two methods. And so then it may be this one, that one, it may be a combination, because when you're leaving one for the other, because you're going to establish yourself inviting, you know, and then rag will awaken. So that means it's going to be partially rag and partially vaidhi, and it'll slowly, you know, more is vaidhi and less is rag. Well, with time it will be more rag and less vaidhi. So it's not, the point is because they work on the same activities, the same principles. All we've changed is the attitude. Right? Does that make sense? That's why it is being brought out and pointed out so clearly by Shonaka Rishi, that you have the activity and its result, and then you have the mood in which it's performed. Because the activity will look the same, but the mood differentiates between why it's being done. You know? Does that make sense? So the form of devotional service, sadhana bhakti, will look the same, whether it's raganuga or vaidhi sadhana. They won't look different. Does that make sense? So that they don't look different, then that means it's the same thing. So what's different then? It's the attitude. One is the regulation of the shastra, that the shastra says, and this is your inspiration. That's one. The other is that you just want to serve Krishna. The activity would be the same. One is I go to Mangal Arati. Brahma Muhurta, it's the best time of the day, best for spiritual life, it's so purifying. By going to Mangal Arati, millions of lifetimes of, you know, sin are washed away, you know, like that. So, you know, and if I don't go, then, you know, somebody's going to get on my case, you know, like this. And, you know, and if I don't go, then, you know, I feel not very spiritual during the day or this or that. And so there'll be so many, you know, that aspect, and so therefore you're there. But it's more based on intelligence. Rag means I like going to Mangal Arati. I like to see the deities in the morning. You know, first thing when I get up, I want to go see the deities. So they're there so I can see. I like the mood. I like to sing for them. I like to, that's wrong. Right? Some Rasiks don't really agree with this, but we're sorry. This is how it's explained by Rupa Goswami, and this is how it's explained by Srila Prabhupada. Like that. They don't like it so simple. They want to say it's if you're, you know, into a particular rasa, then that's that may be a further stage. But the point is that you like to do the devotional service, and that's your reason that you're doing it, not because it's a scriptural injunction. That's Raga Nuga. You know what I'm saying? And so that it continues, is therefore you, in that you would like to serve in this particular capacity. Right? Because imitating such devotional service of the Brajavasis, right? There's generic, just like the Brajavasis, they're just full surrender to Krishna. That's what's special. It's pure unalloyed devotion. Right? Vaikuntha is pure devotion. But Goloka is pure unalloyed devotion. So that's generic. So therefore, it doesn't matter what the rasa is, that can be established. So the particular rasa, that's a detail. Important detail, but a detail. You know what I'm saying? So you can already be following in the footsteps of the Brajavasis and their mood, even if one doesn't have a specific direction. You understand? Then that will naturally mature into one. But they take it, if it's not that, it's not Raghavendra. That's okay, but where's the bridge? Right? And they're saying it's this or that. You know, we don't buy the duality, therefore there's a mundane element to it. Because if it's spiritual, it's different and at one time at the same time one. It's one and different. Therefore you can say there's this Vaidhi and there's Raga Nuga, but at the same time it's all sadhana bhakti. You know what I'm saying? So the one aspect is there, the two aspect is there. And so the one does not conflict with the other. So when they find a confliction, that's a problem. Right? Is that okay? So therefore our mood of this is much more simple, more relaxed. There's no mystique about it, it's just the way it is. Is that okay? Okay, so I'll end here and then and then tomorrow we'll continue with aspect 9. Oh, where's 10? 10 is in here, but somehow or another it's been I forget. Wasn't it? Didn't we find there was one place where was the division? Unless he's just taking this and concluding the whole thing. Could be he's doing that. He's not dividing
nine
it up like this. Yeah, yeah.
Because again, completes.
Completes means?
Completes. I mean, rounds up. As far as I mean.
Okay. Yeah, because the thing is this, the affirmation is one, technically. This is the praman. And then there's nine pramayas, so these aspects are the nine pramayas. Okay. Did we say Hare Krishna?
Om Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai, Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Seems to be a lot of cow dung up here. Why?
Take it off.
Hmm?
Take it off.
Okay.
Thank you. Ready to come back here.
Yeah.